Welcome to the Voices of Women Physicians podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Tatiana Reznik, a practicing physician and a certified life coach. You will hear about inspirational journeys and practical tips from amazing women physicians, as well as effective coaching tools and steps to joyful success. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to this episode. This is the second part of our interview with Dr. Sarah Smith. Today, she will share strategies on how to finish charting faster and get home on time. Dr. Sarah Smith is a rural family physician practicing in Canada and also the charting coach for physicians and the founder of the Lifetime Access Charting Champions Program for physicians. Welcome, Dr. Smith.
I'd come in on Saturdays and spend, you know, or late Friday night, I'd just go back to the office and spend till midnight doing charting and paperwork and inboxes. And so when I was traveling around Australia, there wasn't that same problem because I was in emergency departments. Our work is essentially done while we're going, though at times things would bank up and you'd be there for hours after the shift as well. And then I got to Canada and now I had two consultation rooms and an office. I had a busy practice and the same problem was happening. I'm like, different environment, different EMR, different country, same problem. Something's gone wrong. And I was in that process of, this is not sustainable. I don't know how to fix this. It's stealing my life away. I'm not enjoying this. It was taking up hours after the last patient left and then hours after the kids went to bed and then weekends, pausing my life, saying I can't go to the lake or go to the park because I have paperwork, and then not doing it and procrastinating those forms and really just in a place where I was unhappy. I loved the patients, but I hated the job. And so I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to fix the problem. And anytime I'd asked, it was simply just come in on Sunday or do it in your own time. That was literally the answer I could find in the world. I heard a podcast about general life coaching, and it started to shift my thinking that I'm stuck, I'm trapped, there's no joy here, they're doing this to me, they're expecting too much of me, they're going to break me. All of those words that I would hear about my career, they started to get questioned. There was that even a suggestion that you can have joy now. Even without changing my environment, I could have joy now. And that to me was a profound statement and totally unbelievable. So I thought, well, if there's this thing called coaching in the world, maybe there is somebody who could help me. Maybe there is a physician who's figured this out. So I went looking and I went looking and I went looking, and I could only find physician coaches who were willing to help me leave medicine. But I had no other skill set. I was the sole income earner. And so I had no choice but to stay in medicine. At least that's what I had thought to myself. And so I went back to the original coach who said that impossible things, impossible goals are possible, and decided where I wanted to go, which was I wanted to go home with no homework. That was the goal I had. And then worked with general life coaching strategies to get there. So I had tried and failed so many things until I finally got all of the steps in place to get the result I wanted. And having that complete 360 where I am no longer going home with homework, I am getting home, I've got my evenings guilt-free, I can go out and do what I want in the evenings or the weekends, was so profound. I then started to say, well, I have bucket loads of time and I can't keep this to myself. And I wanted to help the other, at that point, it was the other family physicians who were struggling with this too. And as I started coaching them one-on-one, and that's exactly the problem they came with. They're like, I need to get home with no homework. I'm like, I know exactly how to help you. And we did one after the other, after the other, after the other, until we had helped physicians of all the types, because then, of course, pulmonologists put their hand up and say, help me. Rheumatologists put their hand up and say, help me. Oncologists put their hand up and say, help me. Pediatricians put their hand up and say, help me. So I'm like, okay. Once I'd understood that the same proven process helped them get home, that's when I started doing the program, the Charting Champions program, where we could have it streamlined for people and then also create that community to help them actually do the steps to get there, because it's a lot of change. Yeah.
It's a great journey. What practical tips did you use which help you to come home on time?
Yeah, what great made question.
The biggest difference for you?
Yeah. So I think the big one was absolutely knowing that I did not want to keep going the way I was going. And so I was absolutely determined that I was going to figure it out. And even when that meant it wasn't going to be day one that I would figure it out. Then the next part that we talk about is our foundational step, which is figuring out how do we see patients and document the encounter before we move on to the next patient so that we are completing each patient as we go. And that is a significantly impossible thought initially. You're like, how on earth is that possible? But how is it possible? If we keep our brain open to thinking and being resourceful with what could help me do this? What is it about my charts, my EMR, my patient encounters that is stopping me getting my charts done? And how could I start to overcome those things with that goal in mind? That's how we start to move towards that goal. And that's creating patient protected time. So that's seeing patients closing charts. But of course, that leaves the everything else about our clinical day, everything else. The messages, the interruptions, the inboxes, the questions, the lab results, the script refills. And for the longest time, I hadn't even considered that work. That was just the busy work of the day. There was no plan to it. There was no thought about it. I had no idea how much there was, how long it would take me, how I get rid of it so fast. So it was starting to be curious, questioning everything. What time do we start? What time is the patient in the room? What sort of inbox amount am I going to have? How long will that take me? How do I empty my inbox? What are the things that slow me down? And really getting into the nitty-gritty about every part of my clinical day, noticing the non-physician work, noticing what messages I got and whether I was the right person to be getting the messages and who else could be helping me do that, all of it. So they were the things that really started to shift how I was able to manage my clinical day and still see the same volume of patients or more, still have learners, still get home with everything done, right? So it was a full examination of my entire clinical day. And that's what we do. We get physicians starting to be curious and questioning every aspect.
It is interesting. And if we can speak a little more about completing entire encounter prior to going to the next one. So do you sign into computer and do everything? But signing into computer takes extra time. I mean, like putting all of those passwords and next one until you get to EMR. And also patient, like if you type during the encounter, patient might not be happy that you're not looking at him. How to manage this part?
Oh, I love these questions. So these, what you're noticing right now are the obstacles that you would have to getting this chart done in the encounter, right? So you brought up two very important ones that you notice about your clinical day. So you're like, well, my EMR takes a while to warm up. When I walk into the room, it's a process of buttons, clicks, logins to open up the computer. Okay. So a couple of possibilities there. One is, that's simply the math of opening the computer. So you do that early. You walk in the room and you start to do that as you maybe introduce yourself or that type of thing, right? If you are deciding that I would like to do some of my charting in the room, So therefore, I need to open my computer. You're going to open your computer. Okay, so that's one of the obstacles. And the simple solution is we just simply go through the motions of opening the computer as you walk in the room. Or perhaps your EMR does not need a physician to open the computer. And actually, my computer and my EMR does not need me to open it. Now, some do, and you need a key card access or fingerprint or whatever. Others don't. So I actually have mine already to go. My staff open it up. That's not physician work. Okay. But you could decide, no, it's physician work. I have to do it. So do it. Okay. So that's step number one. Step number two, you said the patient's going to look at me funny. Okay. Mm-hmm. However, think about this. If you went to your accountant and spent half an hour in the room with them, going through your financial plan for the year and all the things that happened during the year and all the things you want to remember to include in the expenses, and then you left, and he made zero notes while you were in the room. Do you trust him or do you not trust him?
No.
No, you don't trust him. No. Now, this is your health. These are the fine details of your medical problems.
Yep.
Okay. The documentation is part of the clinical encounter. This is the informational continuity. This is what happened. What were the fine details? What was the ideas about the working diagnosis, the assessment, and the plan? This isn't just something we love doing in midnight. This is just a part of the encounter today. And so as we have the confidence in the room that we are the executive decision makers as the physician, you are the boss in the room. If you need to write something down so you don't forget it, that's your prerogative. And so as we are talking with our patients, they might give you a funny look. I don't even notice the funny look. You do, because you're like, in your brain, you're like, oh, is this okay? Oh, there's a funny look. It's not okay. Stop. That thought there, it's not okay, creates homework. You're doing it later. Or you decide, you know what? Writing it down is important. And if I write it down right now, I get it right. I get it accurate and it's done. And we allow ourselves to help our patients understand this is best practice for you and me.
How do you manage when patients like to talk a lot and there are a bunch of other people waiting and you still need to finish charting? So how do you complete the encounter on time and do charting and to get the next one on time?
Great questions again. So what you're talking about, it's within the leading the encounter. So leading the encounter is you, when we show up as the executive decision maker in the room, leading the encounter is also the running on time piece or managing the expectations in the room or managing the time in the room. So to your point, the running on time piece, the leading the encounter piece is our hardest work, in addition to getting the charting done right, because this is a huge shift for you. The way you've been doing it up to now has created the opportunity for patients to be able to talk a lot, to run behind, to say yes to multiple problems in the room. And now it's not about retraining your patients. It's about retraining you. So the clinical encounter is within your control if you decide that you want it to be, right? So this is about helping you decide, what am I saying yes to in the room and why? And what are the consequences of my decisions? So when I say yes to something in the room, what am I also saying yes to? All right, this is not, just so people know, it's not a one problem per encounter kind of problem. Because we're talking to physicians, and some of you are psychiatrists, some of you are internal medicine doctors, some of you are emergency department physicians. So this is about stepping into what is necessary to do, what can I do today, what can I not do today, and what are the words I'm going to use for my patient. So my words are no good to you because they're the words I use. And when they come out of your mouth, it may sound totally different to how you talk right now. And so the way I ask you to think about the words you would use is, let's say You've got to pick up the kids from daycare at 5 p.m. It's right now 4:45 and your patient wants to talk to you and give you a very long story about their back pain, right? And you know there's still one more patient in the next room. What do you say then? How do you start to rein in, stop, halt, lead that patient back on track? When you're pushed, like eventually you'll tell a patient, okay, we got to wrap this up, okay? Eventually you'll say something that ends the consultation. Just notice it. What were the words I used under pressure? And just start using them earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally, just start using those words earlier. Because those are the words you already naturally use. So that is the strategy I would initially give to physicians when they're like, hi, they're losing all hope. They're feeling so irritable and restless and frustrated in the room because this patient's going on and on and on. What do you eventually say? And then start to bring that in earlier into the consultation so that you can get back that leading the encounter piece. Okay. This is not bullying, but this is part of you just staying in your position as the decision maker. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And now let's talk about inbox overwhelm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a hospitalist, so I'm not directly experiencing those, but I hear frequently from my clients, from other physicians about inbox overwhelm in primary care. So how do you manage it? How do you make it tolerable?
Yeah, I hear it too. I hear statements like, this is unsustainable. Mm-hmm. They're expecting too much. They've put a new expectation on us. They've just given us new access to patient portals. They've just added emails. They've just added phone messages from patients. So I get it. I'm there with you. I understand. In primary care, we have the same. This work that will accumulate 24/7. Okay. So even if you get to inbox zero, by morning, there will be new things in your inbox. Okay. So it is a never-ending inbox. And our brain loves to tell us things like, we're never going to get through it. I don't know where to start. It doesn't even matter if I start, it's not going to be done. I can't even. I could work 24/7 and it still won't be done. So that dread and overwhelm is not helping us. Our brain does not like to make a plan and carry it out at the same time. So we talk about that planning throughout your clinical day, really thinking about tomorrow or the week ahead for the things that you anticipate about your clinical day, just noticing the clinical day. For the longest time, I didn't even take into account the everything else about our clinical day. It's not just patients and closing charts. It's interruptions, it's messages, it's inbox. And when you're sitting there in your inbox, you are doing high-level work. That hemoglobin in front of you that you're looking at that's a little low, you're starting to be curious. Is it expected to be low? What was my plan if it was low? Is that normal for this patient? Am I now ringing the patient? Do I send a message to my nurse? There's a lot of decision-making you're doing. So we're starting to develop rules around your inbox. What is taking so long and how can you start to streamline it? What is in there that's not for you? It was a message for the nurse. It was something you could have instructed to your staff earlier in the day, so it doesn't have to come to you. So we just stay super curious, make a plan. When are you going to do the inbox work? How long is it going to take you? What is important to do first? These are all important things to start to do about your inbox.
I see. And what three mistakes should physicians avoid in order to be able to finish work on time and to go home?
I love this question. And I'm hopefully I can give you some answers that are helpful to your listeners. So the three mistakes, and it's a kind of a tricky question to answer, but I'll see if I can do my best. The first one is accepting or settling for the status quo. So just going to work day in, day out and getting the same result every day. If you want a different result. We are going to have to start doing something or everything differently. So being prepared to question everything about your clinical day and start being curious about it and start asking your brain great questions about, if I wanted to get home, how could I start to do things differently? So that would be my number one mistake to watch out for. Number two, we already talked about a little bit, and that is letting the patient or admin or the nursing staff decide about your consultations or about your appointment schedule or about your day. So yes, there are things about your clinical day, like appointment bookings, how appointments are made, how many patients you're going to see, that you do have no choice about or no control about. And I know that some physicians are working within a salaried position or for an organization where there are a lot of rules that they have to abide by. That is okay. All right. That is the environment that you currently exist in. Even then, control is available to you. Feeling back in control of your clinical day is still available to you, even when there are rules and regulations that you're abiding by. It's about becoming that executive decision maker in the room. It's about finding your voice and helping you decide what is important about this consultation and what is, when you're in that position of thinking about being that executive decision maker, how then you start to lead the consultations and your clinical day. And the third mistake I would say is not being willing to dream and not being willing to fail. So it's frightening to imagine things differently because you feel like you're going to go down that hole and be swallowed by hopelessness because you dared to think it could be any different. But that is keeping you trapped. If you were to dream, it helps your brain think about, how could life be different if I wanted it to be? And we're taught in medicine not to fail because bad things will happen to patients. And we're not talking about failing clinically. We're talking about being an adult learner. Adult learners have to fail before they can succeed. So what do I mean by failing? Think about going for a run, a 5K run. And if you're not a runner, you're going to fail the first day. And you're not going to make it mean that you're a failure. You're going to be like, well, of course I failed. So when we start new things, it is a process of learning and you're going to fail a bunch of times. If you do not quit, you will start to see some successes. So go ahead and dream and imagine.
Sounds great. Sounds great. And in addition to what we discussed, what practical tool would you recommend for physicians to complete charts quickly?
Oh, practical tool. So it really depends where you're working because you'll be on different EMRs, dictation, typing, making things faster. We're just looking for any minutes and seconds that could make this faster. So just using the tools that you have at hand, but being curious with, what am I doing 100 times a day that I could do differently if I just pause and reorganize the way I do this that could help me. So I think that that is probably the most practical tool when we're talking about people in all different sorts of environments, is look for those minutes and seconds because they matter.
Sounds good. And please tell us a little bit about your program and how you help physicians to be able to get home on time and finish charting on time.
Absolutely. So I have a lifetime access program for physicians called Charting Champions. And inside you get CME credits for every hour of participation. You get very concise, fast modules to get through, about an hour and a half of modules. Not a lot, right? I didn't want this to be onerous. I want you getting results fast. And then we do coaching calls. That is really just coming in and saying, hey, I'm an internal medicine doctor and I'm having trouble because my charts take me 18 minutes after each patient, help. And we start to be really curious with what is it that they're doing? How can we start to make that faster, easier for them specifically? And as you watch those calls or you come in for coaching, you get to make this program perfect for you. So that's how we make it adaptable to wherever you work in medicine. And then we also have the community, because if you've ever tried to make huge changes in your life, isn't it easier when you've got that team behind you who are either going for the same goal and working together or cheering each other on and helping each other out in that season of medicine where you are tired and burnt out or you've got a backlog and you've got this community that don't care because they've got one too and they're working towards closing it. Or they're celebrating a closed backlog and they're like, and you can do it too, mine was bigger than yours, right? So it's not this place of judgment and self-criticism. It's more a place of what are you working towards and how can we help you, which is what I love about it.
Okay, and how can our listeners find you? What would be the best way to connect if they would like to learn more?
For sure. So it is chartingcoach.ca. That is where you find the everything about the program. They can come to the live masterclass or watch the replay masterclass on how to stop charting at night, where we do go through some of those, the four steps in more detail, and then they can join the program if and when they're ready.
Thank you so much. It was absolutely wonderful. Thank you for coming here and for all the wonderful ideas and for sharing your journey. I really enjoyed hearing about your journey, Australia and Canada, so many different settings. You really have an impressive journey. I love it.
Thank you so much for having me. It was such a fun time. I agree.
Thank you for listening to my podcast. If you enjoyed it or found it helpful, please subscribe, leave a 5-star review, and share with a friend. Have any topics you'd like covered? Send me an email at joyfulsuccessliving@gmail.com. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram to connect at joyfulsuccessliving. Have an amazing week. See you next time. The Voices of Women Physicians podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not provide any medical, financial, tax, legal, or psychological services or advice. You are responsible for your own well-being, decisions, and results. Dr. Resnick is a practicing physician, but Voices of Women Physicians podcast is not reflective of the opinion of her employer. You should always contact a professional if you have any specific questions about your unique situation.